Morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf Yud in Avodah Zarah, and we are going to continue from where we left off yesterday. We're right on pace. We are in the last line of daf Tes Amud Beis. Yesterday was all history, all day. We talked yesterday about the breakup of the Second Temple period. We broke it up into basically four segments. We started off with the beginning of the Second Temple period, which was the period of the Persians. The Gemara has it over here. And again, as I mentioned yesterday, everything that the Gemara mentions over here follows Seder Olam. We historically, in the Gemara, will follow Seder Olam as the Gemara does, and that's essentially the position we're going to take. I mentioned already once before that this is up for much controversy. We already discussed this yesterday. No need rehashing. The first 34 years of the Second Temple was the period of the Persians. Persians ruled only for a short period of time. I mentioned yesterday they started their rule about a dozen years before the building of the Second Temple. So really, the Persian rule was, according to Seder Olam, according to our Gemara, not a long rule, right? Their world domination was a short period historically. Then after the Persians, you have the Greeks. The Greeks then lasted for 180 years. Now this number 180, we talked about it yesterday, and it's going to become a big part today of today's daf. That 180 of the Greeks, the first 6 years of the Greeks, you can almost like discount. Discount the first 180 of the Greeks because they only ruled in a certain territory. The name of the territory is called Elam. The Gemara talks about Elam in various places. Elam is right next to Bavel, but it's a different locality. It's a different location. Okay, and they only ruled in Elam for 6 years. So we're going to discount the first 6 years of the Greek rule. Okay, 180 years of the Greeks, followed then by 103 years of Chashmonaim, followed then by another 103 years of Hordus. Now, both during the Chashmonaim and Hordus. Now, Chashmonaim were the ones who conquered the Greeks. Now, we know historically that the Romans conquered the Greeks. The Gemara told us yesterday that there was an alliance that was formed between the Jews and the Romans in order to conquer the Greeks. And in fact, there was a successful alliance between the two for 26 years. That's what we saw yesterday. The Gemara proved that based on a number of historical landmarks, fine. And then that's it. And that's the 420 years. You add those numbers together, and you will arrive at 420 years, the duration of the Second Temple period. We last left off yesterday, very sad, where a couple of Amoraim who lived, a couple of hundred years after the destruction of the temple, they said, okay, the exile is coming to an end. They thought that because, as we talked about yesterday, once you're past 4,000 from Briyas HaOlam, so now you're in the Zman HaMashiach. You're in the times of Mashiach, where Mashiach can come anytime from 4,000 to 6,000. We are currently in the year 5,770, so we are deep into that third two-millennium period. And, right, unfortunately, Mashiach has not yet come, but the Amoraim thought that Mashiach is imminent. In fact, they thought it was so imminent. You remember the last thing we left off yesterday was they gave advice. They said, someone wants to sell you land in Israel, even if it's pennies on the dollar, he says, don't do it, don't take it, because you're just going to lose it. Whatever money you give up, you're just going to lose. That's the advice that he gave yesterday. And, you know, again, as I mentioned at the end of yesterday's daf, it's easy for us to say, you know, well, that's not the best advice that he gave, but that's hindsight, and, you know, it's easy to judge things in hindsight. Too easy to judge things in hindsight. Okay, we are now in the bottom of the Amud. We're on Testament Beis at the very bottom. Ha'ushtara da'avaksiv bei shishnin yaserasa. Now, as we mentioned yesterday, dating of documents went by the Greek government. Why? In other words, before I ask the question, why? I mean, I'm talking about for generations, for centuries, it always followed the Greek government. Even when the Romans were around, they dated all the documents going back to the beginning of the Greek government. The Greek rule, apparently had such a world influence that it didn't bother anybody. It was the minhag, it was the accepted minhag olam for centuries that you date back all your documents to the beginning of the Greek rule. Okay, so that's how it went. Fine. Things changed over the course of time, right? Anytime you go to a wedding, you hear the ksuva being read. So you're hearing, here we are in Boca Raton, Florida, 5,770 years, Mibriya Sa'olam, from the creation of the world. We stopped dating to the Greek Empire. we're a long ways away from the Greek Empire, and us here in America, as and it didn't change when we got to America. It changed some time ago. Historically speaking, I don't know when it changed. There is a Tosfos over here on the top of Yud Amud Aleph that talks about Rabbeinu Tam dating back to Bria Sa'olam. So during the Middle Ages, I can tell you that they stopped dating from the Greek Empire, but that's, you know, that's later on in time. But Bisman HaGemara, everything was dated back to the beginning of the Greek Empire. Good. Okay. Again, what we know, as I just went through the numbers with you, the Greek Empire lasted 180 years and started 380 years, 380, before the destruction of the Second Temple. Good. Now, with all that in mind, so here you have a document, Ha'ushtar Dehavaksiv Bei Shishnin Yisirsa. It had another 6 years on it. Okay? Meaning, if let's say today is the year we're in right now is 5,770, which will change in just a short couple of weeks from now. So on the document, it writes here, so-and-so borrowed money from so-and-so in the year 5776. Okay? That's what the document says. So it's post-dated. It's a post-dated note. Now, let's remind ourselves. What do we say about post-dated notes? They're fine. They're okay. Pre-dated notes are no good. It's possible, it's disqualified, you can't collect with a pre-dated note. Post-dated notes are fine, because basically when you're post-dating a note, essentially what you're saying is the following. I'm lending you money. Normally when I lend you money, I'm placing a lien on all your properties, so that if in the event you default on the loan, I can come and I can collect properties. When I post-date the note, I'm essentially saying, you know what? I'm going to give you 6 years of a loan with no liens on them. No lien against you and against your property. Lender wants to do that? By all means, the right belongs to him. He can do that. He doesn't have to. It's a nicety on his part. It's a little bit of insanity, but if he wants to do that, by all means, he can do that. That's called mechila. We see that time and again throughout the Gemara. Absolutely can do that. So, okay, 6 years. That's a little strange. Right? To waive your right to place a lien on the property of the borrower for 6 years, that's a little much. But that the document was post-dated by 6 years. Savra bana kamei de rav lameimar haishtar me'ucharhu na'akvei adamat yezamne velo tarif. So the Chachamim looked at this note and they said, this is during the period of Rava, the third generation of Mara, and they said to Rava, okay, it is what it is. It's a post-dated note. 6 years post-dated. I know 6 years is strange. Most lenders won't do that. They won't give you 6 years of lien-free, recourse-free money. But, okay, but that's the story over here. Amar Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman says, nah, can't be. I'm going to give a different explanation. Amar Rav Nachman, hay safra dukna, kasvei, Rav Nachman says, I don't think it's a post-dated note. I think the sofer over here, he had a different dating system. Meaning, as I explained just a couple minutes ago, we normally go back to the beginning of the Greek Empire. That's the Minhag HaOlam, is to date back to the beginning of the Greek Empire. But the beginning of the Greek Empire, it wasn't a smooth start. They didn't just simply dominate the world. They had 6 years where they ruled in the town of, in the province of Elam, and then after 6 years, then they went into world domination. Most Sofrim go to when they became world powers. That's when they started dating. Rav Nachman says, I'm of the belief that this Sofer went back to where they started ruling in Elam. Good. That explains the discrepancy. Meaning Rav Nachman says, I don't know this to be a fact, but I think that the better explanation is not that it's a post-dated note. The better explanation is that this sofer went back to when they started ruling in Elam, which happens to be exactly 6 years prior to the world domination. D'tanya Rav Yossi Omer Sheishanim Malchu Be'elam V'achakach Pashta Malchu Sam B'chol Alam Kulo. Right, we know Rav Yossi gives us, Rav Yossi, by the way, presumably is Rav Yossi ben Chalafta, author of Seder Olam, right? The language over here is the exact same language as Seder Olam, Rav Yossi says that that's exactly what happened. Greeks ruled for 6 years in Elam, then went global, then became the global dominating rulers of the land. Good. Okay. Now, Rashi says this a couple times throughout this daf today, and it makes a lot of sense. Meaning, we have a note. Essentially, the question becomes the following question. If you're going to give an explanation of, is it post-dated, or is there some other way of explaining why it is that this note is 6 years ahead of time, right? I'm gonna go with the rationale that most lenders would not post-date. If there's another way to explain why the dating of this note goes is ahead of our time, so to say, right? Is 6 years ahead of us? If there's another way to explain it, so Rav Nachman says, I'm going to explain another way. Because typically speaking, lenders do not waive the right to place a lien on properties, right? If you think about it, you realize, right? Banks.
Advantage,
the only reason why you would post date. No, the only reason why you would post date is to your, meaning you being the lender, to your disadvantage. You just simply are mochel, right? You just simply said, look, I know you're in desperate need of money, and I realize that as a lender, I can attach a lien to the properties right away. I'm going to give you a little cushion.
So if the note was doing
no, but I think if the note is got this extra 6 years, that gives the lender an extra 6 years of liens on all the property that the guy might have
sold. No, but he doesn't get any liens until the actual year it's recorded.
Right,
well,
right.
Far by the contract,
liens don't start until the origination of the note. And the origination is not until 6 years after. Okay, so essentially, so that's what Rav Nachman is saying. Good. All right, and this really will be, the Gemara is going to have a little more discussion about all this, but really this is going to be the Gemara's conclusion. The Gemara's conclusion is, I'm going to give not a conventional explanation of why it's dated 6 years ahead of time. It's slightly unconventional, but I think this is a better explanation rather than say that the lender was mochel. The lender waived his rights to collect because it's just strange. People don't do that. People don't lend money and just simply say, you know what, 6 years, lien free. It's just too strange. If there's another explanation, I'm going to give that other explanation. Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, well, maybe we could give another explanation as to why it is, where this note was dated from. If I gave another explanation, could very well be that, no, the truth of the matter is it really is a shtar me'uchar, a post-dated note. Now, okay, let's get our historical bearings all straightened out. As I mentioned before, the Greeks started their rule 380 years before the destruction of the Second Temple. Okay? It's really 386, but again, we discount the first 6 years of the Greek rule because they were only in Elam. They didn't have global domination until 6 years into their rule. So the magic number for the Greeks is 380. 380 before the destruction of the Temple. Okay. If I now chart back historically, from the beginning of the Greek rule, I'm talking about world domination, and I go back now to Yetzias Mitzrayim. How long ago was Yetzias Mitzrayim, the exodus from Egypt, from the beginning of the Greek rulership? And the answer is extraordinarily a clean 1,000 years. It is exactly 1,000 years from Yetzias Mitzrayim to the beginning of the global Greek domination. And the numbers are real simple. From Yetzias Mitzrayim to the building of the first temple, 480. The first temple lasted 410. Add another 7 years of the exile, and add on top of that another...
Seven years for the exile, right?
What's that? 70 years for the exile, and then add on top of that another 40 years. So we get to the Greeks' world domination. 34 years of Persian, 6 years of the Greeks in Elam. And so it is, our numbers are 480 plus 480 plus 40. Okay, it's simple. It's real simple. And you get to a clean 1,000 years. Okay? So, again, let's just put this in perspective from Bria to Olam. Exodus from Egypt was in the year 2448. Right? Exactly 1,000 years after the birth of Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu was in 1948. Exodus was 2448. But I say Exodus, by the way, it's Exodus also Kabbalah Satara. 2448. And then 1,000 years later, in the year 3448, that's when the Greeks have world domination. Okay. Now, in dating system, we talked about this yesterday. Let's review this again today. Certain numbers are just ignored. In other words, millennia, it's an ignored number. Think about it. When I tell somebody, somebody asks me, what year are we in? So I'll say, Tavshanayim. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying we're in the year 770, right? No, we're not. We're in the year 5770, right? But we've been now in the sixth millennium. We've been in the fives for many, many years. I don't have to remind you that we are in the year 5770. It's sufficient if I just simply say Tavshanayim. Plus, on top of that, also because we give the number in numerical in gematria form, for me to get to the number 5,000, it'll just take a while. I'll have to string together a lot of letters in the Hebrew alphabet before I get to the number 5,000. But aside from that, you and I both know that we're in the sixth millennium. Okay, so sixth millennium or fifth millennium? How do we say it? Sixth millennium, right? Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay. Fine. So fine. So it could very well be. Here's another explanation. Maybe when this Sofer was writing this document, he wasn't going back to the Greek Empire. Maybe he was going back to the Exodus from Egypt. Look, it's a great year. We left Egypt that year, right? And maybe he was dating back from then. Now you're reading over here, right? Dated from, and it seems like it's going back to the Greek Empire. No. Maybe it was not 380 years ago. Maybe it was 1,380 years ago. Right? What happened to the one? He left it out. Right? We just, in other words, millennia are just simply understood, right? Assumed. Okay, maybe he just left it out. If that's correct, we're going to go back to saying it's a post-dated note. Right? If that's correct. So maybe that's the explanation. So the Gemara to that says,
still off by six, no?
Why? What? No. Meaning, no. We're not. In other words, that's exactly the point. Meaning that it's 6 years ahead. So I'll simply say it's post-dated by 6 years. If we went back to the Greeks, so there's a little bit of maneuvering because the Greeks. I know the Greeks started 380 years ago. Right, again, we're at the Churban HaBayis Sheni. I know the Greeks started 380 years ago, but the truth of the matter is that really they started 6 years earlier. Maybe the Sofer went back, not 380, but maybe he went back 386. Right? You can entertain that. But if you go back to Yetzias Mitzrayim, there's no maneuverability. We know Yetzias Mitzrayim was that particular year. Right? 1,380 years before the Churban HaBayis. Maybe that's what he dated back to. If that's true, that's a lot of speculation, but if that's true, so then the only conclusion, it's a post-dated note. So the Gemara says, Amrav Nachman, there we are, Begola ein monim ela lamachi yavanim belvad. Nobody does that. That's just not done. We count to the beginning of the Greek rule, and that's what we do. Now he thought, Rav Nachman, look, he was just defending his position. But the Gemara says it's not true. Nafak, he went out. Doc, he did an examination. The Ashkach, and he finds a brisa. The Tanya Begola, in Monim, Elalamache, Yevanim, Bilvad. The brisa says it straight out. Here in the exile, we go from Malchus Yevanim, and that's the story. In fact, you learn up the first sugya in Masechta Rosh Hashanah. Did not, and we learned over there Be'echad Benisan Rosh Hashanah L'Malachim Ule Regalim Ve'Amrina, and over there on that first mission Rosh Hashanah, we say L'Malachim L'Mai Hilchasa. What does that mean? That when it comes to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, it's the beginning of kings. Amr of Chista Lishtaros. It means that when we have documents, we date it to the kings. That's the first Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. But wait, Utnan. And then we're going to stay in that first Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. Be'echa b'tishrei Rosh Hashanah l'shanim l'shmitim. We say that the first day of Tishrei, coming up in a short 2 weeks from now, the first day of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah l'shanim l'shmitim. It's the beginning of Shemitah. That we know what that means, right? Agricultural rest for the land. And it's also the beginning of Shanim, beginning of years. What does that mean? So, ve'amin l'shanim ma'yilchasa ve'am Rav Chista, and then the Gemara explains, in the name of Rav Chista, l'shtaros, it means documents, right? All loans are recorded going back to Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. So now, we should be thoroughly confused. We are thoroughly confused. The first part, it's one Mishnah. The first part of the Mishnah says, Nisan is Rosh Hashanah al-Malachim. Kings, what does that mean? It means that the kings, when Nisan rolls around, this is now the second year of the king. Right? Even if the Gemara Rosh Hashanah says, let's say he started ruling in Adar. Okay? Good. Nisan comes around, 30 days into his rule, could be even less than 30 days into his rule, and it's year two of the king. Good. So that's, and then we get to the next part of the Mishnah. The next part of the Mishnah says, when you get to Tishrei, it's Rosh Hashanah, for what? For shtaros. But that was Nisan. Kashi shtaros ahadadi umishaninan. It's obviously a problem. The answer is, kan lamalche Yisrael, kan lamalche ovdei kochavim, lamalche ovdei kochavim mitishrei maninan, lamalche Yisrael minisan maninan. And there you have it, and that's the answer. That when we have, when we are in a Jewish monarchy, and we're following the Jewish kings, they are, everything for them revolves around Nisan. And Nisan becomes so critical because Nisan is our month. Meaning that's the month that the Jews became a nation, and that's our month. So whenever we deal with Jewish monarchy, Nisan is the date. However, if we are not autonomous and we're not following a Jewish monarchy and we're following some other governmental system, some other monarchy, Tishrei is the date. The Anan Hashtan Mitishrei Maninan. Look at this document that was presented to Rav Nachman. It was counted from Tishrei. The Isakdach Liyitzias Mitzrayim Maninan. And if you want to still maintain your theory that it's going back, the dating is going back to Yitzias Mitzrayim, Minisan Be'inan Lememne. It need to have been counted from Nisan, but the document doesn't say Nisan. It says Tishrei. Tishrei is a secular monarchy, not a Jewish monarchy. Elav Shmamina. Lamalcha Yavanim Maninan. Therefore, it's dating back to the Greeks. And Rav Nachman says, and let me, I'm just going to reiterate this one more time. This is now Rav Nachman saying, it's not 6 years post-dated. The note is not 6 years post-dated. Rather, this particular sofer must have dated it not at the world domination of the Greeks, but the very beginning of the Greek Empire, which was 6 years earlier. It's not normal. People don't normally do that. But that's a better explanation than suggesting that this note happens to be 6 years post-dated. Period. Yeah.
No. You know, that's just interesting about this. It actually kind of makes sense because if the Nisan's Abraham and Tishrei's did,
right,
it makes sense that like Tishrei's the non-Jewish kids are Abraham.
Okay, very good. Very good. Okay, good. That ends that discussion. And for the most part, we're pretty much done right now with our little tour of world history. Hopefully, some of it has now become clear in terms of just landmark events in historical time. We go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah taught us that there are different days which become like personal yontif. I don't mean yontif, I know I say that. But, you know, pagan holidays, right? There's the standardized pagan holidays, which the Mishnah back on Daf Ches taught us, Kalanda, Saturnara, Kartisim, and we talked about what these days represented. And then there are kind of like personal yontifs. So one of the things the Mishnah mentions is Yom Ginusa Shel Malcheihem. The Yom Ginusa. Now, Ginusa, right? I don't know Greek, I don't know Latin. I know a little Spanish, but, you know, just enough to get by. But Ginusia obviously comes from the word Genesis, right? And so Ginusia is that the Genesis Day of Kings. Now, Genesis over here in this context could really mean one of two things. It could mean the day they're born, right? Or Genesis can mean the day that they became the king, right? It's the beginning of something. That for sure we know. But what is it? Now, The birthday, I'm going to have to rule that out. Right? That's it. I didn't start the Gemara yet. I'm just back in the Mishnah. But it seems like birthday is not the right shot. Because I'm reading the Mishnah, Yom Ginusa Shal Malcheihem V'Yom Haleida. Yom Haleida means their birthday. Right? Clearly. So, Yom Ginusia can't be their birthday because that's the next part of the Mishnah. Alright. So you realize already that we're going to have a difficult time citing what the pshat is in Yom Ginusia. From the Mishnah alone, it sounds like we're talking about the time that they were inaugurated as king. That seems to be the pshat back in the Mishnah. Let's see the Gemara. Yom Ginusia Shamachem. My Yom V'Yom Ginusia Shamachem. Amar Rav Yehuda Yom Shema'amidem Bo Ov Dekochavim Es Malkam. Okay, so the day that they inaugurate the king. Okay. The Hatanya Yom Ginusia V'Yom Shema'amidem Bo Es Malkam. Problem is the Braisa. Okay, it's not the Mishnah, but still it's a Braisa. And the Braisa says Yom Ginusia and Yom Shema'amidem Bo Es Malkam. Oh, that's a problem. If Yom Ginusia is the day of inauguration, the Braisa is just repeating itself. Braisa would not do that. Lokasha hadide hadabre. Gemara says, well, maybe the following pshat. One is talking about their own inauguration, the other one's talking about the inauguration of their son. Omi mukme makaba hatini Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef gives a running commentary. He writes Targum on Nevi'im and Ksuvim, and here this is now Targum on Sefer Ovadia. Okay? We read this Haftorah. Where's Stuart? Where's Stuart when I need him? When do we read this Haftorah? Avayishlach? All right. We'll have to look it up. Hinei katon asatich begoyim. Right? They are small. Sefer Ovadia is talking about the kingdom of Edom, otherwise known to us as the Romans. Right? That's the entire subject matter of Sefer Ovadia. Okay, that's it. And in Ovadia it says, Hinena katona sachti begoyim. You people are small, talking to the Edomites, otherwise known as the Romans. She'in Moshiva Melech ben Melech. They don't do that. In other words, they don't go father, son, in terms of kings. Right? We do that, right? Shlomo David, I'm sorry. David Shlomo, Shlomo Rechavam. We do that, but they don't do that. And Bazui Atama'od, you are really low, you're really disgraceful. Shein Lam Loksav Lo Lashon. Again, talking about the Edomites, they don't have their own language. They borrowed a language. They borrowed a writing, the printed letter. None of that is their own. They don't have original. Everything for them is borrowed from somebody else. So good. So, based on the Targum given of Rav Yosef on Sefer Ovadia, you see that the Romans don't inaugurate their son. They don't do that. They don't go father-son. So, Ela Mayam Ginusia Yom Haleida. So, it seems like Yom Ginusia is the birthday. Ve'atanya Yom Ginusia V'Yom Haleida. But that can't be either. Lokasha. Hadide Hadabre. So, the Gemara says, we're talking about him, we're talking about his son. Ve'atanya Yom Ginusia Shalom Yom Ginusia Shalbino. Yom Haleida Shalom V'Yom Haleida Shalbino. We have a brace over here that tells us his birthday, son's birthday, his Yom Ginusia, his son's Yom Ginusia. So Elamai Yom Ginusia Yom Shema'amidem Bo Malkam. We're going to go back to our first pshat. Our first pshat is Yom Ginusia is the day of inauguration. Okay, what about the Targum of Rav Yosef on Sefer Ovadia? V'lo kasha had the day had the brave. V'i kashalach d'lo mukmei malka ba malka al yedei she'ela mukmei. Sometimes it happens where the son of a king becomes appointed the king. It's done through She'ela. There's the petitioning of the Senate. If it's done under certain circumstances, the son is inaugurated. Kigon Asviras Bar Antoninus. One episode of Asviras Bar Antoninus, the Gemara does point it out. It is episodic, it is anecdotal, that it happened one time, but it did. It happened on one occasion. The Malach, that he ruled. Amar Antoninus, the Rebbe. Okay, good. And from this point forward, from today to the end of today's daf, we will get treated to a great stories of Rebbe and Antoninus. Now, where are we historically? We're in the second century. Okay, again, I'm not a historian, so, you know, which Antoninus is who? Ich weiß nicht. That's Spanish, it means I'm not sure. I told you my Spanish is excellent. So the So, but we're somewhere in the second century. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, right, the last of the Tanaim, right, one of the last of the Tanaim. So we're now somewhere in the second century period, and we're going to learn, right, we've seen this already at the end of Sanhedrin, but we're going to continue citing stories about a fascinating relationship that they had. So one of our leaders, right, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, was very close, intimate friends with Antoninus. Some of the stories that we'll be seeing today are wild, right? Fantastic. And some halachic questions that come up based on these stories, but good, so we're going to get treated. So, kigon. So here we go. Asfiris b'Antoninus d'malach amale Antoninus l'Rebbe. So Antoninus says to Rebbe, be'inan diyim lach asfiris b'ri tachosi. I want two things. Number one, what I want is I want my son Asfiris to rule under me. And I want him to be anointed and inaugurated the king while I'm still alive. I know that doesn't happen. The Romans don't normally do that, but that's what I would like. Two, v'tisabe Tveria Kanaya. Also, I want to give Tveria Kanaya. I'm guessing it comes from the word colony. I'm not sure, but Rashi explains, I want to give them tax-free. Tax-free existence for all inhabitants of Tveria. It's simply because Rebbe lives in Tveria. Antoninus loved Rebbe, and therefore, on account of Rebbe, living in Tveria would become a tax-free existence. The Amos Luchada Avdi Trey Lo Avdi. Now, I know my Senate, and I know that I go to my Senate and I say, I want these two. They'll say to me, "That's piggish." They'll give me one. So they'll give me one of those two. So what should I do? Now, in all these discussions between Rebbe and Antoninus, Rebbe never directly answers the question. Rebbe and Antoninus speak in code. Okay? We find this very often. The kings to one another speak in code. They have their own language, their own way of communication. Rebbe speaks in code. Another, right, that's in general. Here in the Gemara also, and the Gemara is going to pretty much say this, Rebbe does not want to get credit for any of the advice that he gives Antoninus. Remember, Rebbe is a Jew, Antoninus is a Roman, and if any of the advice, because as you'll see, some of the advice that he gives is really strong, powerful advice, including kill him, right? You'll see later on. So Rebbe doesn't want to get credit for that. So whenever Rebbe says something to Antoninus, never says it directly, but only speaks in code. Good. Takes a person. This is now Rebbe's answer to Antoninus, but he does it like in charade form. So takes a guy, puts on top of the shoulder of the other guy, takes a yonah, right, a dove, puts it in the hand of the guy on the top, who's riding on the top. Now, he tells the guy on the bottom to tell the person on the top, "Delamifrech min yadei Yona, let the pigeon go." Amar, okay, that's the charade. Now, do we understand what's going on? Antoninus did. Amar shma mina hachi kamarli. I know what Rebbe's telling me. At bay minayu de asfiris beri yimloch tachosi. Ask for Asfiris to become the king, the Emalela Asfiris to Tavi Tavar Kalnaya, and let Asfiris relieve Tveria from the taxes. And that's how you're going to get both. Good. Amalei Mitzaran Lechashuvai Ramai. On another occasion, Antoninus tells Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, you know, they're killing me over there. The Roman Senate is just killing me. Ma'ayulei Legina Kol Yuma Akalei Pugla Mimishra. So, in response, again, Rebbe does not answer anything directly, nothing verbal. So he takes him out to the garden, and he takes some sort of produce, and he just simply plucks it out from the row, kame, in front of Antoninus, one by one. Amar, Antoninus says, "I get it. Shma mina hachi kamerle at ketol chad chad minayu v'lo titgaru behu bekulo." Knock him off. Bump him off one by one, right? Kill off members of the Senate one by one. Okay, good. All right. As I mentioned,
maybe
right?
Not literally kill them.
I don't know. It's no, katol usually means kill. Usually. Okay? V'le male meimar behedja, top of the next amud. Why not say it directly? Amar shimi chashuvei ramayim mitzaru lei. Very simple. Because Romans hear that this is the kind of advice I'm giving Antoninus, and obviously they're going to come be coming after me. V'le male balachash. What's wrong with whispering? So the Gemara says, Mishum deksiv ki of hashamayim yolich es hakol. There's no such thing as whispering. Right? There's no such thing as a secret. I attribute my good friend Rabbi Goldberg, who told me this. You know the definition of a secret: something you tell to another person, one person at a time. Right? That's a secret. There's no such thing as a secret. Right? Rebbe whispering it also is no good. Okay. Havale ha'u barta. Next story. Antoninus had a daughter, Deshma Gira. Her name is Gira. Ka'avde Isura. She did something bad. The Gemara doesn't say. Rashi says she's mezana. She committed adultery. Daughter of Antoninus. Now, Shadale Gargira. Here we have now a formal exchange between Rabbi Antoninus, and again, everything is done through code. They don't speak to one another. Now, the way Rashi explains it, it goes like this. Here is the exchange according to Rashi. Shadale Gargira, he, meaning Rabbi, sends to Antoninus Gargira. Gargira is some sort of plant.
Herb,
okay, and the way Rashi presents the dialogue. Look at Rashi, second line down on the page. Antoninus Larebi, Asif Shishmo Gargira. Sorry, this is Antoninus sending this to Rebbe. Okay, apologize. Shishmo Gargira Ruka Balaz Vehaven Rebbe Mali Ula Asif Azev Vade Simanu Hu Deshachli Gargira Nigura V'Nimshach Lev Gira Im Hano Afim. Yodea haya lumod Antoninus. Okay. So, Shadarle Kuzbarta. So, Rebbe sends to Antoninus Kuzbarta. Some other type of herb. Okay. Rashi tells us how to translate it into Old French. Good. Klomar, and Rashi writes, Shchot Habat. Kuzbarta. The word kos means to shecht. We see that a number of times throughout the Gemara. Shtei milo. So kos barta was Rebbe in code telling Antoninus, we'll kill her. Okay? Shadarle karti. So now Antoninus sends back to Rebbe, leak. And again, it's not the leak, it's the word that it represents, karti. Rashi explains, what does that mean? Klamar im ken yikari zari. I won't have any more progeny. She's my only daughter. Shalach le chasa. And so what does Rebbe send Antoninus? Lettuce. Right? Lechuga, says Rashi. Klamar chos Allah. Okay, so have compassion upon her. Right? And don't kill her. Now, according to Rashi, it's really a strange exchange between Rebbe and Antoninus. Right? Antoninus says, my daughter committed adultery. Rebbe's first response, according to Rashi, is, okay, so kill her. Well, Antoninus says, yeah, but then I'm not going to have any more progeny. And Rebbe says, okay, so don't kill her. Right? You realize that, right? We all smile. You realize that the exchange, according to Rashi, is just a strange exchange. Like, if Rebbe really meant kill her, so then why should the fact that she's his only daughter change that? Tosfos on the top of the page is bothered by these questions. Shadalei kuzbarta leperisha kuntras kasha. Ma ala bedato shrebi mitchila lomar shishchatena v'od kasha shelo besof chazabo rebi me'atzmo. Tosfos is bothered exactly by these questions. What changed in Rebbe's mind that he started off with the response of killer, followed by, nah, don't kill her. Okay? Fine, and in defense of Rashi, I'm not sure. I don't have right now, currently, a good defense of Rashi. Tosfos is bothered. Lakach nira kepirish Rabbeinu Chanan of Aruch shadalei legargira klamar naafe gira hanoe vanoefes targum Yerushalmi gaira v'gairasa. So, according to the Aruch and according to Rabbeinu Chanan, that wasn't Rebbe's initial response. Rebbe's initial response was covered up. What he was trying to say with the word gargira, gargirta, is cover it up. See if you can cover it up. Shadalei kuzbirta kisei shaklona v'alchichano b'seiser v'antoninus lo haven ma sheshalach lo. And according to the Aruch, and according to Rabbeinu Chananos, quoted by Tosfos, Antoninus didn't understand. He thought that Gargarisa was... He thought the Kosbirta was killed. That's what he thought. And that's why Rebbe had to send the second fruit, specifically the lettuce, the chasa, to say, no, you misunderstood me. I meant to have compassion. So there was a, according to the Aruch, according to Rabbi Chanano, a miscommunication between Rebbe and Antoninus, and that was a need for the second exchange between the two of them, just for purposes of clarification. Okay. So, it's a little bit smoother in terms of, because according to Rashi, you really are left with the question, what was Rebbe thinking, and then why did Rebbe change his mind? Okay. Continuing on, next story. Havalei Ubarta de Shamagira, I did that already. Kol Yuma. Next story, about 7 lines from the top of the Yamad. Havashadalei dehava pircha bimatrasa vechite apumayhu. Antonina sent Rebbe money. Now, Rebbe didn't need the money. In fact, we know Rebbe was wealthy. Rebbe was independently wealthy. The Gemara elsewhere says, I don't remember where this Gemara is, the Gemara elsewhere says that if anyone comes to Kadosh Baruch Hu on the Yom HaDin and says, you know, I'm telling you, I didn't learn any Torah because of I was so wealthy and I had so much, you know, to concern myself with. So Kadosh Baruch Hu points to Rebbe Yehuda Anasi and says, you know, he was wealthier than you and he had no problem learning Torah, so he will be Mechayev anyone who uses an excuse of wealth in terms of not learning Torah. So Rebbe was independently wealthy. He didn't need money from Antoninus. And by the way, the Gemara describes the money given in, it was ground up gold, placed in a sack, and wheat was placed on a layer on top. So it was disguised. He smuggled money to Rebbe, as the Gemara tells us. Amalu amtu yichita l'Rebbe. And he would say, Antoninus would say, go send this to Rebbe. Amalei Rebbe lo tzarchina. Isli tuva. Rebbe says, I don't need it. I got plenty. So Amar lehavlaman debastrach. So Antoninus says, no, I'm not giving it to you. I'm giving it to your next generation. Right? This is your nest egg. Right? This will be your endowment for the next generation. Diavla basrai. The asu basrach with the asiminayu nefuk alayu nefuk alayu. Good. So Antoninus said, look, you and I, we have the best relationship. In fact, later on this morning, we're going to learn more about how close they were. We have the best relationship. You and me are fine. However, for future generations, I can't promise you that we're going to have such a good relationship. So you know what? Take the money, save it, put it aside for your kids, because your kids are going to probably need this for future generations. My children, your children, I can't promise the same type of relationship. There was a cave, an underground cave that went from the house of Rebbe to Antoninus. In my younger years, I used to envision miles of underground caves that went from Tiberia all the way to Rome, right under the Mediterranean Sea. Who knows? I don't think that's the case. I think that Antoninus had a house, some sort of palatial estate in Israel. I think so. Although I'm basing it on nothing. Okay, just to be clear. So there was a cave. There was an underground cave that went from Rebbe to Antoninus' house. The base Rebbe Kuyuma Hava Maisa Trey Avdei, and Antoninus was escorted by two attendants. Chad Katle Abava Debe Rebbe V'Chad Katle Abava Debe Sei. And it was an expensive trip for Antoninus to go visit Rebbe. It cost Antoninus two servants every single time he went. He killed one servant when he got to Rebbe's house, and he killed the other servant when he got back home to his own house. Simply because, I don't have, we'll discuss how he could do that, but the reason why he did that is because he didn't want anyone to know. Okay? So he always was escorted, but then when he was done with the escorts, he killed them. Okay. Okay. Tosfos, second Tosfos on the page. Chad kato abava de Rebbe. V'im tomar valo shvichos damim hu misheva mitzvos. V'afilu Yisrael aser. Dehatanya hovdi kochal meroa behe medaka lo ayu malam v'lo moridim. Tosos is bothered by the obvious question. You're not allowed to kill. The first answer of Tosus is self-defense. Now this is a loose interpretation of self-defense because his life is not in imminent danger, but if he lets the escorts go and they go and tell people, you know where we took Antoninus, we took him to Rebbe's house, so his life will become in jeopardy, so therefore it's self-defense and therefore he kills him. Okay. All right, that Tosos is first answer. I think I'm just going to leave it. In other words, it's Tosos, right? It's out there. That's one suggestion. Od yesh lomar shayaborer haminam vehamisoros to afagav dein minam bo moslinyan kabals karban miadam leinyan harad ika. Or who did he choose as escorts? So Tosos makes a suggestion. He chose people who are chayv nisam, right? He took people out of prison, out of the Roman prisons, and gave them a presidential, in this case a monarchy pardon. And he says to them, okay, you'll escort me, but meanwhile, they were Chayv Misa anyway, and that's who he used as his escorts. Okay, interesting suggestion by Tosfos. Okay, Antonin says to Rebbe, look, when I'm with you...
Every time.
Yep. So when I'm with you, when I'm with you, see, Antonina says to Rebbe, you can't have anyone there with you. Meaning these meetings that we have to be super secret, super private. Nobody can be there.
When did Rebbe publish all these drafts?
he must have shared this on his deathbed. Yumachad Ashkechel Rebbe Chanina Bar Chama Dehava Yosef. Now, one time Antoninus got there and he found Chanina Bar Chama, and that's a problem, right? He didn't want to see anyone there. Amar lo amina lach bina da asina lo nishkach kavar kamach. Antoninus was upset, angered. Amar leis din bar inish. Rebbe says, oh, him, he's not human, don't worry. Pointing to Chanina, Rebbe Chanina, he says, don't worry. Leis din bar inish, he's not a man. He's just not human. You have nothing to worry about. Amalei lema leila hu avda degani abava dekaim velese. So Antoninus says, well, let's test this out. He's really not human. You're telling me he's some other form of life other than being a human. Okay, so I'll tell you what. At the doorway, at the entrance over here, there's a guy sleeping. Now you and I both know he's not sleeping. He's dead. Okay, it's a really deep sleep. So there's a guy over there at the doorway. He's sleeping. So if your friend, who you say is not human, so I'll tell you what, have him go to the doorway and have him, quote unquote, wake up the guy who's sleeping at the entrance of the doorway. Also, Rabbi Chanina bar Chama Ashkechei d'Avakatil, and Rabbi Chanina goes and he finds and the guy's dead, and this is going to be a tough guy to wake up. Amar Hechi Avid. But Rabbi Chanina was bothered by the following dilemma. Well, I can't go back and tell them that he's dead. Ein mishivin ala kalkala. It's a great concept. It comes up a number of times. You shouldn't be the one telling bad news. Okay, in general, right? In general, you shouldn't go ahead and reveal to somebody, right? You shouldn't be the one having to tell other people that somebody died, right? I know that's information that, you know, usually, generally, people need to know, but you shouldn't be the one telling it. Now, I can't just simply run because that's a zilzil to the malchus. It's degrading to the malchus. In other words, my instructions were go and wake him up. Okay, I can't just simply run away. So what does he do? He davens, he's mispalo, and with divine assistance, we have tchias amesim. Guy comes back from the dead. Amar. Now Antonina says, having just seen what just happened, Yadane zute de ispechu mechaye mesim. Yeah, I know even all of you can do tchias mesim. I know. Even zute, even the small ones amongst you, pointing to Rabbi Chanina. Miu. But Antonina says, I want to make this perfectly clear. Be idna da asina lo nishkach einech chkamach. I don't care. This will never happen again. I don't want this ever to happen again. When I meet with you, it's got to be a private meeting. Okay. Let's do one more story for today, and we'll stop. Kol yuma hava mishamish l'rebi machalei mashgalei ki hava by rebi l'mesik l'purya hava gavchan kamei purya amalei sak ilavai l'puryach. Aunt Aninas attended to Rebbe. He fed Rebbe. He gave Rebbe drink. Even when it came time for Rebbe to go up to his bed, so Aunt Aninas would bend down and say to Rebbe, "Step on me, so you can go up to your bed." Rebbe says to Aunt Aninas, "No, that's degrading. You're a king. I'm not going to do that." Amar mi yisimenu matzah tachtecha la'olam haba. Aunt Anina sees a much bigger picture, and Aunt Anina says, "I'm only hoping that this is a foreshadow for how it's going to be in Olam Haba. I would like to be your stepping board in Olam Haba." Amale Asina La Alma De Ase, and Aunt Anina says to Rebbe, "Am I going there? Am I going to go to Olam Haba?" Amale In. Rebbe says to Aunt Anina, "Yes." Amale V'Hak Siv Lo Yeh Srid Labes Esav. Again, we go back to Ovadia. Ovadia is all about Edom, Rome. He says, it says, "Lo yesrid lebeis esav." There's not going to be any survivor, right? No one's going to go to Olam Haba. So Rebbe answers, "Ba'ose ma'ase esav." No. That's only when they behave like Esav. If they don't behave like Esav, they're going to get a chelek on Olam Haba. Tanya nami hachlo yesrid lebeis esav, yachol hakol tam alamar, lebeis esav, ba'ose ma'ase Esav. Only when they behave like Esav. Stop over here. We'll pick it up tomorrow. We'll finish up our stories without Rebbe and Aunt Aninas. Rebbe Chanan ben Akash, Shemar, Zagash, Baruch, Zagash, 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 Zagash